Welcome to Dietitians Uncorked, a podcast hosted by Kat and Kelly, two registered dietitians who co-founded Nutriving, a virtual nutrition practice. We talk all things food, nutrition, life, and of course, wine. This is a judgment-free zone where all foods fit and all bodies are welcome. Thanks for listening. Everyone, welcome back to Dietitians Uncorked. We missed you guys. It was weird not doing podcast episodes for however long we were gone. How are you, Kelly?
I'm doing well today. How are you, Kat?
I'm good. We are not drinking wine because it's pretty early in the morning, and we felt that that would be... not necessarily massively inappropriate, but just probably not conducive to a good working day. So.
Right. We both have a lot to do today, so coffee seemed like a good choice.
Yeah. We want to tell you guys, we have, by the time this episode airs, we have a wonderful new service that we are offering. It's a group program. It's a three-month program with weekly masterclasses, live Q&As, resources that you can download. It's a whole thing. We are so excited about it. We've been working very hard to make it fun and cool and just like a very easy to navigate an interesting way to kind of get into the world of nutrition from a non-judgmental perspective, a way that you can kind of take your nutrition knowledge and apply it on your day-to-day basis without necessarily following a rigid diet and kind of leaving the door open for you to explore foods. We are so excited about it.
We've been working really hard on it, and it's been awesome because it really feels like we are taking things that we talk about on a one-on-one basis with people, and now we're going to be able to reach more people and, you know, in a different format, because we understand not everyone might want the one-on-one attention, and so this is something we are so excited about to be able to offer.
We did a promo video not that long ago. There are some bloopers that will be posted very soon.
Always will be.
I think it's good to show people that we don't take ourselves too seriously, but we are passionate about it. So Kelly, tell the lovely people how they can find out more or what they need to do if they're interested in joining our group program.
Yes. So if you go to our website, nutriving.com, there's a tab at the top for services. When you hover over that, there's going to be a page for group services or group program. So there you can see the promo video, the final version, not the blooper version, but we'll make that available elsewhere. But you can watch that video, get a bunch of information about what to expect with the program. And we will likely, by the time this podcast airs, we also have a webinar coming out that is a little more in depth than the promo video. So we will be advertising that soon as well.
That is right. So let's get into today's episode, which is a fun one. I think this one kind of aligns a little bit more with the beginning of the year, the time of the year where a lot of people sort of take time to be more intentional about their foods, be more intentional about their daily practices or habits, be more intentional about what they would like of the year. And we felt that food rolls is a great topic to kick the year off. Since we're not drinking wine, though, how do you prepare your coffee, Kelly?
I love half and half, like just straight up half and half. If I don't have, so that's it. I bought this.
You just drink half and half.
Well, yeah, with coffee, you know. But I have this little whisk thing, you put it in, it's like a handheld frother, essentially. So I put in the half and half, whisk it up so it gets all, like, bubbly and foamy and delicious, and then I, you know, top it off with coffee.
Fun.
How do you prepare yours?
I'm an oat milk kind of gal with my coffee.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know if I knew that.
Yeah, I love oat milk. It's I feel that out of all the plant-based milks, oat milk pairs really well with coffee, and it froths in the way that milk products, cow milk products do. So mm-hmm. I actually got, Santa brought me a gift. It's a milk frother and a, it's a milk frother and it heats the milk. So it's actually, it doesn't Ooh. Just get bubbly, it gets warm. I'm always cold, Fancy. Like perpetually cold. And so I don't like putting cold things into the cup. This sounds so like bougie, but hey, it was a gift and I've been using it a lot. It's great.
That sounds really nice. Mm-hmm. You know, I do love oat milk. Maybe I need that product because sometimes I will heat oat milk on the stove, like in a pan, and then I will froth it, and then I will put espresso in it. So kind of like half espresso, half oat milk, and that is really delicious.
Yeah, I have to say, I don't really like almond milk in my coffee. I don't like soy milk in my coffee. I don't... Milk is fine, but I have issues with lactose in general, so I try to avoid it a little bit. And oat milk mm-hmm. just is the perfect option in my book.
So we don't have wine today, but we have lovely coffee beverages for this episode.
Cheers. Good morning, or whatever time you are listening to this. Okay. So food rules. You probably have heard, or maybe a lot of people have heard this word or concept being thrown out there, especially if you are interested in intuitive eating or mindful eating and you've gotten on social media or read a few things about it. Food rules is somewhat of a topic that tends to come up a lot, and we're just going to define it for you so that you understand what we mean by food rules. So I'm going to just go ahead, just get into it. So food rules is any decision about food that is based on external cues. What do we mean by external cues? We mean maybe a past dieting experience, maybe a comment that someone said to you about a food. Culture may define some of these food rules, something you heard on a news segment or social media. Some of these food rules actually may also come from a healthcare professional that you might heard at some point in your life, and you've just sort of put them into practice, maybe not intentionally, but you've thought about these things and just put them into practice. And you use those rules as an override versus like an internal cue, like your body's intuition about what would be satisfying for the moment for you, what would be something you actually want to consume at the time, anything like that.
Right. So when we think about those external cues, as people move through life and maybe try different diets, have different conversations with people, just generally are exposed to different life experiences, we can really start to accumulate those external cues that are speaking, that are affecting our decisions around food. When you think about children, right, they can more easily tune inward to their what they're craving, you know, what sounds good to them or what they would like in that moment, because they don't have this bank of previous experiences that we do as adults, right? As we go through life and talk with people, interact with different cultures, have conversations with family, with friends, try different diets, you know, talk with physicians, all of those things kind of layer on top of each other. And sometimes we don't even know where those rules are coming from, right? It's like it happened so long ago that it's kind of like deep inside at that point. And this is why really talking about food rules, you know, with a dietitian or just kind of reflecting on your own can really help to uncover where some of that came from.
Yeah. I find too that a lot of food rules that I sort of think about at the top of my head, they were meant to be a bit of a guideline for healthier eating. Sort of like that was where they came from, right? Like eating half of a banana instead of eating the whole banana. It's like, well, you don't need all those carbs, just like eat half. And I don't think that they were maliciously, not all food rules were maliciously planted, or, you know, they were told to individuals, like, hey, do this so that you can suffer your whole life. I think some of these food rules become a bit more like laws in our perspective. Like, people treat themselves around food like they're in military school. They're like, oh, it has to be this way. I have to be disciplined. And it really takes away from enjoying a healthy diet that feels more adventurous, and like you can discover things that you love and actually enjoy your food in the times where you're maybe not in a routine and you are invited somewhere or attending an event. There is a lot more freedom, and you don't feel guilty because these food rules are not overriding your experience as a human being, where food is part of culture, is part of how we celebrate, how we mourn. I think inherently food rules potentially were not, maybe didn't always come from a place of being super malicious, but they can become a hindrance in having food freedom, which is the whole point of our philosophy, the whole point of the intuitive eating movement, and a reason why a lot of people find this sort of philosophy to really work for them, because they can finally just eat the foods they enjoy.
Right. You know, when we have a bunch of food rules that you're adhering to, it really does take away that flexibility. Mm-hmm. And that can be really detrimental, because it kind of results in you constantly shifting and paying attention to those external cues. And over time, it's like you lose practice tuning inward. So it becomes really difficult to even think like, oh, what would I want? What would sound good? What would be satisfying right now? If you're constantly using those food rules and operating from that perspective, you really do lose touch with that. And it can take a lot of time and practice to tap into that again.
Yeah, totally. We kind of want to also clarify, like, a food rule versus a preference. I think to you, for example, if I'm going to eat a banana, I usually will eat half because I'm very happy with half of a banana. I'm usually not a full banana eater kind of a person, unless I've had kind of a crazy day and it's just what I'm thinking of. But that is my food preference versus a food rule that tells me I have to only eat half a banana. And I know I'm just like hammering it in with the bananas, but, you know, it's a good example. But I guess what we're trying to say is food rules sometimes can lead to a pretty restrictive way of looking at food, which leads to a more complicated relationship with food and your body and how you feel, versus a preference is something that you're actively or consciously aware, and you are doing it because it is just your preference, and that is okay. So I think the main point here is, in what we're trying to get at, is intention. Like, where are those intentions coming from? Are we following food rules because we feel that we have to? Are we following preferences because we have that freedom to do so? So it's an interesting thing to think about, especially in the beginning of the year.
Mm-hmm. And I do love bananas. And back to the banana conversation, I definitely did follow that food rule. When I was in school to become a dietitian, I remember when we learned about, you know, the diet for diabetes and carb counting and all that. And I just kind of internalized, okay, you should have half a banana. And not until, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, did I break free from that. I was just like, I love bananas, like, love them. And I just, as I got more in the intuitive eating space, I was like, okay, if I love it this much, then I'm going to eat the whole banana, right? But what's crazy to me is I operated from that perspective, even as a dietitian, like, even as someone who's been through a bunch of school and talked with people about this a lot, like, I still had some of those rules. And you really do have to kind of dig deep and do the reflection to identify them for yourself.
For sure. I think I confessed to this in our, I think it was the episode about sugar and sugar cravings, where I called ourselves sugar treat sluts. I confessed.
Give that one a listen if you haven't yet.
Yeah, it's a really good one. I talked about how I realized that I was automatically buying and consuming dark chocolate without really giving myself the chance to think, am I craving dark chocolate? Do I even like, you know, milk chocolate? And I realized this had become a food rule that I was just practicing without even thinking about it. It was just sort of like, I knew that dark chocolate contained maybe a more nutrient-dense profile compared to milk chocolate. And I was sort of like, all right, from here on to eternity, I love chocolate, so I'm going to stay with the dark chocolate. And it turns out I actually prefer dark chocolate on most occasions, but I love feeling that I can choose the milk chocolate when I'm actually craving that. So,
interesting. I have thought about that conversation so many times. Like, every time I have chocolate, yeah, it does come into mind. And I think I was reevaluating my relationship with chocolate, and similar to you, it does turn out I do prefer dark chocolate. But it's nice to have that flexibility in a time where, you know, milk chocolate to me can taste sweeter, right, than dark chocolate. It has more of like the bitter notes.
Sure.
Sometimes you want something, you know, super sweet, and milk chocolate is great for that.
Yeah, totally, totally. One thing we do want to bring up in this episode is about food rules that don't make any sense. You know, the rules we've talked about before, usually the foundation of them come from a perspective on maybe helping you find balance with carbs or fat or something like that, or just sugar in general. And they might be like, don't do this or do that every single time. But there are some food rules to me that come up often in conversations with clients that I'm just like, who said this was healthy? Or like science-based, or like, where are these coming from? One that comes up often with my clients is the drinking a glass of water when you're hungry. And this one just pisses me off. It's like your body's giving you a signal that you are actually hungry and in need of fuel. And somebody told them some point in their life, oh, just drink water and then your hunger will go away. So you can be leaner? I don't get it. It's really, really stupid.
It is such shit advice. Like, to say a blanket statement like that when, you know, you have no idea what a person's hydration status is at a given point in the day, right? If you're thirsty, then you're thirsty, right? You drink water.
And if you're hungry,
you eat food, right? Maybe you have water and food at the same time, but the way that that rule is often spoken about makes it seem like being hungry is a bad thing and that you shouldn't respond to those hunger cues with food, which is just backwards.
Like, what the hell? I remember having a conversation with a client, and this individual said, you know, I know that I get hungry at the wrong times, and I'm just, you know, when I'm trying to be healthy, I'm just like actively hungry all the time. This client was saying, you know, I've been drinking a lot of water and it does help, you know, with my hunger, you know, cues, because my stomach is full of water at all times. And so, I do remember her saying, it does get a little uncomfortable though, because I feel like a water balloon, like I have a massive water balloon in my stomach. And I just could not believe what I was hearing. This person also came to me as a client from a different health professional as well, that was trying to coach this client to lose some weight. And it broke my heart, because poor thing is walking around with a stomach full of fluids, just like overwhelmingly, in trying to cope with the fact that she's actually hungry and just trying to drown that communication from the body with water.
Literally.
like legit, literally drowning her hunger cues with water. And it's sort of like, why do we tell people this? It's so backwards. It's so fucking backwards.
Yeah, that sounds pretty miserable. And then you have to pee literally all the time.
Yeah.
All day.
Yeah. And you know how tiny my bladder is. That would just be awful. We wouldn't be able to be recording
disaster.
This episode.
No. Yes. So another nonsensical food rule that comes up a lot when we are talking with clients is not to eat after a certain time in the day. 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, for example. And this is very common, especially with the rise of intermittent fasting, which we should do an episode on, P.S.
Oh, but definitely need to.
Yeah. There are a lot of diets that prescribe eating during a certain window or stopping eating, starting eating, you know, at various times. And again, that means you are paying attention to an external cue, literally a clock on the wall for when you should eat, instead of tuning inward and trying to listen for those hunger cues. And like, what is your body, how is your body telling you that it's time to eat?
Yeah. It's crazy because I feel like even if it's not related to like an intermittent fasting kind of diet, or it's just like, I don't know, I get a lot the, I don't eat after 8 p.m. The 8 p.m. is across the board, some magical number. And I always think that maybe people just have this understanding that there's like the general manager of your body is like, oh, it's 8:01. Let's start storing all this as fat. Let's just put it as fat. And like, you know, Kelly's about to eat some popcorn. That's not going to do anything. We're just going to put it as fat. You know, it's just like our understanding of how our body works is so misguided that we believe that after a specific time, it's when you should probably stop or whatnot. And it's just, I don't know. My life is kind of crazy sometimes. And some days I eat much later. Some days I eat earlier. Some days I'm just very hungry all day. Sometimes I'm not that hungry all day. I can't imagine feeling like I have to stick to a time for no reason to stop eating as a rule.
Yeah. In our household, we always eat dinner late. Honestly, probably 8 to 9 o'clock. We're on that Spain time, the Spain meal schedule over here. But, you know, I think we're in the, that's less common. More people eat earlier. But I also know this rule in particular can be really difficult for people to let go. Just, you know, in having conversations with clients and even previous, you know, patients I've worked with in other settings outside of our business, this can be really difficult for people to move past because it's just so ingrained. Like they feel like it's truly wrong. It's damaging, you know, to your body, to your health, to eat after a certain time. And so when a food rule, a belief like this is so ingrained, when it's really deep, it does take working through it and really thinking like, okay, where did this come from? Does it make sense? Like, is there any validity to this rule? Like, is this helping me? Is this hurting me? Those are questions that it's really helpful to ask yourself when you have a rule that really is affecting your decisions, like on a consistent basis.
Yeah. The last one that we put in this list of like nonsensical food rules is and I think this one's a little tricky, and I'm going to explain. People say often, like, oh, you should avoid processed foods. Or, like, I don't eat processed foods. Or, like, processed foods are all terrible. I have personally used the word avoiding highly processed foods when I'm talking about a specific, let's say I'm talking about salt. And people are like, well, where do I, you know, what are high sodium, high salty foods that I should be aware of? And I talk about highly processed foods, and then I give some examples. The concept of avoiding processed foods is a bit tricky because literally, if we look at the FDA definition of what a processed food is literally any food that has been combined with another ingredient or changed in any way from its original state. So by that definition, we're talking about yogurt, bread, literally any food that's been combined with another ingredient. And that inherently isn't something unhealthy or not very nutrient dense or whatnot. It just means that it's been altered. And we have to acknowledge that sometimes processed food can be a wonderful thing so that we can have food readily available for us for longer periods of time. Or sometimes they just add something to make it more nutrient dense, which is great. So processed foods in general, just as a baseline, the concept in and of itself does not necessarily mean something bad, okay? I think when health professionals are telling people to avoid processed foods, they likely mean something a little less nutrient dense, but just as a blanket statement, that can be kind of confusing to a lot of people because, yeah, it's just a shitty way of describing what a variety of foods are actually made.
Right. It's not super helpful, and I think that type of language can instill fear in other people, and particularly in a setting like a doctor's visit, right? Mm-hmm. When the doctor's in there for 7 minutes and then out really quickly, and you don't really have that time or that space to expand and ask all the questions you want. And so if a healthcare provider drops that phrase and then like runs out the door, right, the patient is left with these feelings like, oh, okay, shit, like no processed food. Like everything has to have one ingredient, or I can never have anything that comes in a bag or anything that's crinkly, mm-hmm. right? That's a lot of, there's fear around that food, which is not helpful mm-hmm. in making food decisions. Like mm-hmm. that's not teaching a patient or a client to really evaluate what they're eating in any kind of helpful way. It's just kind of scaring them.
Yeah, not a very helpful term. Maybe a little bit more helpful is like looking at a food label and like actually understanding what's in your product that might make it more or less nutrient dense. But overall, it's just kind of a charged cluster of mm-hmm. words in the food and nutrition world.
So let's move. We've talked about bananas a few times. We want to go through a few other kind of directly food related rules about certain foods that people may commonly avoid that you and I have heard, you know, that we've worked with. So talked about the banana one. The chocolate is another great example, you know, feeling like you can only eat dark chocolate or milk chocolate. Another one is not eating white carbs. So someone
dun,
who...
Dun, dun.
Yeah, right? Appropriate music. When someone avoids all white products, white bread, white pasta, white rice, you know, anything like that, when they see that, they're like, oh, I can't have that. I have to have whole grain, right? Which we talk about, you know, recommendations for grains, right? Like, there's a difference in nutrient density. These two things offer different profiles, right, in terms of the nutrition. But that does not mean you can never have white rice or white bread. So when someone does operate from that perspective, I can only have this, like, if you go to someone's home and they prepared something with white rice, oh, can't have that, right? I only eat brown rice. Then you get to this space where it is very limiting for someone.
The white bread, white rice, all that, that's a big one. I come from a culture where we eat bread, but kind of like homemade bread or fresh bread a lot throughout the day. Probably too much, because usually people are not eating a variety of things, and often talk to people about maybe adding a little variety, having maybe something different for dinner, we call it once. However, our fresh bread is like a staple in our culture, and whenever I come across somebody that may have heard that whole grain is a better option or whatnot, it's like they've sworn this bread off, and it's so sad because it's fresh and delicious and just part of our of how we do culture, you know, and so it's sad when people follow that rule. Another one is only eating a low calorie or light version of a specific food. So like a low calorie bread or a lower calorie cream cheese, a lower calorie anything. And it's a food rule that you're like, oh, well, I'm going to get this one. It's not as good, but it's less calories. And sometimes this can lead to like, you end up eating more of it because it doesn't quite satisfy what you're actually looking for. But that is a food rule a lot of people kind of abide by. And at the end of the day, I am not sure that that is actually significantly making anything more healthy or more nutrient dense or making a big impact in their weight fluctuations or whatever they are trying to accomplish by trying to eat something that's light or low cal. It just kind of takes all the fun away from food.
Right. And thinking back to when we talked about food rule versus preference, right? If you prefer the taste of something, right, a light or low calorie version, whatever it is, if you truly prefer that, like it tastes better to you, you know, that's something different. That does mean that you're tuning inwards and you're paying attention to what your body finds satisfying, you know, in a given moment. But if it tastes like shit to you and you're still choosing it, you know, that's an indication that it is a food rule.
Yeah. I have a good example for this. Do you ever get the cream cheese that's whipped?
Yeah.
Whipped cream cheese?
I've had that. Mm-hmm.
To me, it's a much more enjoyable experience to have whipped, you know, cream cheese.
It's light. It's airy.
Light. Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's spreadable. I think it's great. If you compare a regular cream cheese and a whipped cream cheese, the calories are kind of, there's a big difference between one or the other. Because of the obvious reason of the whipped cream cheese has air in it, right? So it probably has less volume of a dense cream cheese, the whipped compared to the regular. That is a preference. I actually enjoy whipped cream cheese a whole lot more than the regular. I am aware that there's a difference in calorie, but this is a preference. There are other products where I would 1,000% pick the higher calorie versus the lower calorie, but it's a good way of knowing when you're tuning inward versus following food rules.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. That's a good example. Another rule that I have heard very often is not drinking juice, not drinking any beverages that have calories. So someone who only drinks water or coffee or tea. And that really sets you up for, you know, some limitations, right? If you're at a restaurant and they have a wonderful freshly squeezed orange juice or grapefruit juice and you miss out on that solely because you are afraid of the sugar that's contained in juice, you know, that is a food rule because you're directly operating from an external cue. So there are times in life where juice can be a great addition to a diet, whether you get that experience, you know, for a freshly squeezed, or maybe you just don't feel very well. Maybe you're getting over a cold or something and you're not eating very well. Juice is a great way to get some nutrition in. So that rule, I think, can be really detrimental in terms of limiting people and just feeling scared, right? A lot of what we're talking about is fear around certain foods. And I think there is a lot of fear around beverages that have calories.
Yeah. If I'm being honest, I think that's still one of the things I have to actively think about why I'm avoiding juice. I personally don't love juice. Like, I don't buy it. It's not something I crave. But every once in a while, it is really nice to have. And in those times where I find myself like, that would be nice, I have to think a little bit, like, with more intention about, like, yeah, I can buy that. I can consume it. And my blood sugar will be fine, you know?
Like, you have permission. You're giving yourself permission.
But that one specifically, the juice, I got to say, it's something I always have to think about a little bit more. Not so much with, like, you know, the white bread or, as I mentioned, the dark chocolate and or the banana, but just in general with juice, I think it's because in my training, there was a bit of fear, like fear mongering when it comes to juice. And of course we're talking about making decisions based on the feedback of your body and making decisions that are informed, right? Because when you are informed, that fear of like not being in control the way it could totally mess up your body, or like you have no self-control around certain foods, like that kind of goes away and you're left with just the facts. And I think that's where food rules start to maybe have less power over you, because you understand that eating a whole banana is not going to give you diabetes, right? Drinking a glass of juice, it's not going to completely derail you and you're going to have a sugar crash. Eating white rice is not a deterrent or just the antithesis of a nutrient-dense meal. It's an interesting thing to think about, and it does require a lot more intention, which is a practice that requires energy. It requires self-awareness. It's not as easy as me telling you not to eat the banana, the whole banana, not to eat whatever. It requires you to use your actual brain and awareness of you in that moment. But I think it is important, especially when you're especially if you're working on having a better relationship with food.
Exactly. And I think a great place to get to, you know, after much work is for some of these foods, juice, for example. Maybe you don't chug a glass of juice every morning, right? Because that's not what you want. That's not what your body is asking for. For me, I think I also had some juice rules previously, and I don't drink juice a lot, really. But if I have it, you know, I enjoy like a small portion, because otherwise it's just like so much acid, you know, and it doesn't make me feel great. But just being able to do that is a great place to be in, because it means that you're not scared of that food. You're just choosing how you want to incorporate it, when you want to incorporate it. What's the frequency? What's the portion size? Those decisions are based on what you know that your body needs to feel good. And that's the ultimate goal with all of these rules, right? All of these rules that may revolve around certain foods, the goal is to move to that space where you are making those decisions.
Yeah. I also want to encourage people, like, we talk a lot about tuning inward, about preference, about what feels good in your body. And I can already hear people being like, well, I would love to just eat french fries and drink juice all day. Is that what you're saying? and I know that that's something I've had to sort of dispel a lot. What we really want to encourage people in their journey, or whatever you want to call it, with food and kind of away from the dieting world, is empowering you to feel like you can confidently make your food choices without feeling like there's something to be terrified about the food or your behavior around food. Part of that, you know, is education. Part of that is understanding, you know, what Kelly just said, the portion size, maybe how much, you know, where your juice is coming from, or whatever you're consuming, if it's something new, understanding on how to read the food label. That is part of it, right? Like being able to be an informed consumer. That is part of it, because it sort of removes these fears that are unfounded, and it gives you the understanding of what you're actually consuming. And then the other part too is understanding that you have a body that is different than anybody else's body, and you might process foods or might feel a certain way depending on where you are in life that is different than others. And so there's no reason why everyone has to have a cookie cutter meal plan full of food rules that are not necessary for you at this time. So I hope that kind of clears up that a little bit of that maybe a misunderstanding when it comes to food freedom.
Right. Nutrition truly is so personal. Mm-hmm. Like so personal, right? Mm-hmm. We're talking about what you put inside your body. And yeah, the thought that we all should be following the same diet or same food rules is truly crazy when you think about it. So let's move to, we want to end the episode with just kind of some actionable tips, just different steps to take to help you identify food rules that you might have in your life right now. So one thing we would encourage you to do next time you grab a food, really pause, like take a moment to evaluate why you grabbed that food, right? Is it because you really like it? Is it because you're in the mood for it? Have you not had it for a while and maybe you're really craving it? Those would all be internal cues. You're tuning inward to see why you want that food. Or are you grabbing a certain food, maybe a light version of something, because that is what you did when you followed a certain diet, you know, 5 years ago, or 10 years ago, or 20 years ago. A lot of these rules can truly be very subconscious almost, and that is where the power comes in truly pausing and taking a moment to try to just sit with it, like try to identify why you are choosing that. So it could come from some kind of dieting rule or dieting experience that you had. Maybe you ate this food and someone made a comment about it. So you're avoiding a certain food. Maybe it has something to do with something you read on social media, something you heard on a news segment, right? These are all places that those food rules can come from. So one of our biggest tips is really, again, take that pause and take the moment to pause when you grab that food and try to identify why you are eating that food.
Yeah, it's about intention, right? Being intentional about the decisions we're making. And hopefully this episode was eye-opening, or if that's something you've been thinking about, I hope it resonates in a positive way. And of course, if you guys have any questions or any comments, we are on Instagram, we are on Facebook. The podcast now has a special place in our website, which we've been very slow to get up there, but we appreciate, some of you have written a few reviews on our Apple podcast, and we appreciate you guys so much. We've had an increase in listeners, so if you're new here and you're wanting to kind of, you've missed some of the earlier episodes, we highly encourage you to go back. We have a few really, really good ones. Hopefully it'll make you laugh and also be informative. But we are so thankful you guys are listening to our podcast. We love having you around here. And yeah, check out our group program at our website, and we will see you guys next week.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.